hats off to first Todd, Simon, and his crew. Fantastic effort by those young men. I thought they really played their hearts out. They scrambled. They clawed. They really, really gave us a really good game for 35 minutes or whatever it was, and just were resilient and did not quit. And so you have to, you know, give them credit for coming into a hostile environment like Thomas and Mack and playing us so close for so long. So hats off to them, and we wish them luck.
Trust me, Marvin Menzies is way more excited than he sounds. UNLV is 6-0, but it's not the record. The players he is able to put on the floor, that is what inwardly is making him grin from ear to ear. Well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Out of Line. And if you think this show is recorded, you would be wrong. It's live and sometimes interactive. We are here in Vegas Strong in the Fox Sports studio every Sunday from 8 to 9 on the flagship station of the Golden Knights, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM. We're also streaming live on the Las Vegas Sports Network. I'm Brian Feldman. And the we I'm referring to is the guy that makes it all happen behind the big board, future Nevada Hall of Fame producer, Magnum. You can also hear Magnum on several other shows on the Lotus Broadcasting stations, including his player interviews on the Vegas Golden Knights post-game show right here on Fox. Some good ones recently. Also, here again in studio and sitting to my right on your radio dial, Caleb Herring, UNLV football radio color analyst and only 5 years removed from playing quarterback for the Rebels. And because today the Fremont Cannon still resides with that team from up north.
You mean the school down the street from the chicken ranch?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It's there until at least 2018. And because of that, Caleb is still the last QB that led them to a bowl appearance. When you have a minute, check out and follow the Twitter page. It's Out of Line, 1340 AM. And the Facebook page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. Callers are welcome. It's easy to get on the show. And it's even easier to get zapped by Magnum's kill switch if your comments or questions are not FCC friendly. But what the hell? If you got something you feel needs to be said, give us a call. The Fox Sports Studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Yeah, What's on Tap is pouring out thanks to Bubby's University on South Hualapai. Between Tropicana and Flamingo, a great place to watch every game. Today we'll start things off with the final UNLV football game of the season, and who better to do that with than the guy I just mentioned. We'll look at yesterday's loss in Reno and at the future of the program under Tony Sanchez. Then, of course, we'll turn our attention to the hottest team in Las Vegas, and you will hear my interview with one of the rising stars on that team. And if you're thinking it must be the first place Vegas Golden Knights, you'd be wrong again. Although we still have the out-of-line exclusive feature nightcap on the menu this morning, defenseman Shea Theodore. And being that the college football polls were mutilated again this weekend, I invited the SportsFanJournal.com's lead college football writer, Emily Van Buskirk, and her co-host on the sports world's hottest new podcast, Sideline Sass, that's Kaylee Krish. They'll both be coming on the show and try once again to help us figure out this now potentially very murky playoff picture. And I strongly suggest you hang around for NFL Picks of the Week segment of the show. Cumulatively, we are 25-14. And if you're quick with math, you know that's 64%+. Our advice is free. You just have to be listening to get it. What's on Tap is brought to you by Bubby's University, where you can earn your degree in food, draft beer, gaming, and the hard stuff. The only major is good time. Bring your Rebel ID and your first beer is free. You can roll 24 hours a day. That means they never close. Bubby's University at 4570 South Hualapai between Tropicana and Flamingo. Go to bubbysuniversity.com for more information.
I want to commend Tony Sanchez and the football players on continuing to move the needle in the right direction with our football program. I know it's got to be tough, man, because losing is just not fun. and especially against a rivalry team. And I feel for the guys and Tony, but I tell you, I shot him a nice text after the game, and he hit me right back, and he's just a class act, and he's doing things the right way, and he's creating the right culture, and we're going to be better next year, and that'll equate to more wins. So stay behind him. Keep pulling for him. He's a true rebel. I love that guy, and I love those players, and I hope that they don't take it to heart, and I hope they use this as motivation to be even better next year. So don't beat him up too bad, guys, in the media.
You know, I really like Tony Sanchez, Caleb. I do. I think we all feel the same way. I, unlike you, didn't mind Bobby Houck, but the bottom line, I'll never let off the gas on that one. You know that,
see.
Right? But you know, the whole thing is, it's not about liking a guy or disliking a guy. It's about one thing. It's about winning. And yes, Tony Sanchez has won more games every year in his third year. Two the first year, four the last year, and now five. Is it enough?
I think with Tony, the thing is, it is about more than winning, because he's laying the foundation for winning. So it's a little bit harder, I guess, in his situation to kind of, you know, rebuild the program, because, like you said, what Bobby did here, we went to a bowl game in 2013, but I don't think that was a true reflection of what he did. He didn't build anything up. I think we had a random outlier of a season where we had 7 wins, and that ended up getting him an extension. And then after that, he went on to win 2 games
did
a year after
that. Did he send
that.
You a bonus for that extension,
he
by the way?
He should have. Something. He didn't, really? No, he didn't. He didn't. There was no text, no thank yous, no letters.
It's like,
no.
It's like when Ken Norton Jr. jumped on Napoleon McCallum and ruined his leg and his career. I said, did the guy do anything? He didn't even send him flowers.
Yeah, you got to send flowers for that. But no,
man.
We got none of that. So what Tony's doing now is building a program up from basically nothing is what he had when he came on. You know, a 2-win team on average for the previous years before him. He's steadily increasing that, but he's laying the foundations as far as getting the community support, getting the things you need to actually have a chance in recruiting and getting some better athletes here. He's laying that foundation right now, so I think he needs the time. He's on the cusp of doing that. You see that with the expectation that he had coming into this season. We were all preseason jumping on, hey, bowl game, you got the talent now. I for one, thought the talent was still a little bit raw, and it is. And you saw that with Armani, especially this season. But they're young in a lot of key positions. They still need to add depth in a lot of key positions. And that's what he's going to try to do. He's already been talking about the recruiting class for next year being one of the biggest that UNLV's had in recent memory. So he's laying the framework. And once, you know, things like the facility that's getting built, they're breaking ground on. The Raiders just broke ground on their stadium, which UNLV's going to share with. Those type of things will only project upwards. And I'm one of those who believe that coaching is about consistency. I think you look at any of the programs that are very successful across the nation, they have consistency at the coaching position. So there's a program, a mindset, a philosophy that's been kind of festering in the program for a long time, and that breeds success. So I think Tony's the right fit for now as far as the foreseeable future of being the leader of the program. And he's put, like Mimsy said, he's put it on the right track. He's got the mindset right. He's got us at least expecting to win. So we can look back at this season as a disappointment rather than more of the same. So next season, I think, yeah, he has to take a little bit bigger of a jump than one more win. 6 wins, I don't think, is going to be considered a successful season next year. I think he gets to a 7-win mark, then we're talking about, yeah, this guy's right for the program.
Well, like Magnum said, 6 wins, it would depend on the wins. If it got them to a bowl game, and say they won a bowl game, that might change everyone's perspective. But again, Mags, you both are alumni, and I know from your perspective right now, you know, it happened so long ago, and we're supposed to have short memories and forget and look forward, but that Howard loss still bites your ass, doesn't it?
Well, you know, here's the thing. You could say, oh, they won 5 games, it's an improvement. To me, the season was a complete failure. It starts with the fact that they got beat by a garbage Howard team, by a quarterback who ran all over them, and that basically set
the tone. He was Cam Newton's little brother.
I don't care. He could have been Tom Brady, for all I care. He ran all over them. They had no response the whole game. They were outcoached by Howard's coaching staff in that game. You know, then, great, you bounce back, you beat Idaho, a little bit of a revenge game. Look, Idaho is in their last season of playing this level of college football. They're dropping down next season. So their cupboard was empty. any college player who had any salt at playing D1 football was not going to Idaho. So basically, you lost to a lower division team, and you beat, for all intents and purposes, a lower division team. You went to Columbus, and nobody expected you to win, but you were down by 4 scores before people in Las Vegas even woke up on that Saturday morning. And that's, you know what, that's fine because it's Ohio State, but to not compete in that first few minutes of that game, you know, great, you beat San Jose State, but even in that game, there were lots of mistakes. To me, the season is a failure because A, you lost to Howard, B, you blew a 27-point lead to Air Force, a team that won 5 games, a team that you should have put away when you had the chance. Then the following week, you blow a 2-score lead, 2-touchdown lead to Utah State, who sucks. Then you got your teeth kicked down your throat by BYU on senior night.
Well, you did beat Fresno State and back-to-back wins Fresno and Hawaii.
But Hawaii's not a good team. Here's the thing. We talked about it before the show. You beat one team you were supposed to beat. You lost to 4 teams. Or you beat one team you were supposed to lose to. You lost to 4 teams
that you were supposed to beat. Honestly, at the beginning of the season, who knew Fresno State was going to be that good? Well, I actually had that game down as a win for them.
If you know, I did. I figured they were going to go 7-5. That was my expectation, 7-5.
And me too.
The problem is, it's not that you lost 7 games. It's who you lost to and how you played in those losses. The tone was set early, and I knew they were going to lose in the first minute of that game yesterday when a garbage Reno team went right down the field and put 6 points on you in the first minute of the game. To me, that said they were unprepared. There was no anger built over from getting your ass kicked by that garbage school up north last year.
He had a chance to be bowl eligible.
This is the thing about everything. I agree with everything you just said. I agree the season should be looked back at as a failure. But what my point about it is, the reason you look back at it as a failure is because you expect the team to be better now. Like, you see the team is better. The team is in a better place now under Tony than it has been in a long time. And
I think that's exactly right.
The right thing that you do here is let him continue to build that. He's taking the program in the right direction. Of course, there's some things that need to be. I, for one, am disappointed in losing to Howard and losing to Reno. It's bitter taste in my mind. I'm not even playing
anymore.
And BYU. Guys, is there a learning curve for going from the high school level to the collegiate level, where maybe he's got to give him more of a chance.
I think the thing that he's learning, that he's going to learn as a college coach, is more of head coaching in college is who you put around you, number one, and number two, how you attack recruiting. And I think those are the hardest things to adjust to in college, because as a head coach, you're constantly working, you're constantly recruiting, and it's a constant struggle to get through something. I think he's on the right side of that learning curve right now.
And I think you know, he's doing the recruiting right. You know, he's bringing in good players.
No doubt.
And yeah, there is a learning curve, and like Caleb said, it's something I said to you after the Howard game. There's expectations, which is something we have not had, which is why I'm so angry. As an alum, as a fan, as a guy who donates to the school, I'm angry that this team went 5-7. A couple years ago, I would have been thrilled that they went 5-7.
Absolutely.
You know, so the fact
and
that
that's a culture shift.
Yes, exactly. Everything Caleb said is exactly right. It's a culture shift. It's expectations. And it's why I'm angry, because I expected this team to be better than what they were. If they won 4 games under Bobby Houck, to me, that was a great season, because the culture of losing had been embedded so long into this program that when you get to a point where you expect going into the season to go to a bowl game, and I know Coach Sanchez expected this team to be better. He expected them to play better.
Sure.
And so it's a shift, and you know what? Yeah, he has a leash. I think he has at least next year, maybe more. Because it's not a process that's going to change overnight.
No, I agree with you. And I mean, you look at the skill positions. Lexington Thomas, one of the best running backs in the Mountain West. Of course, San Diego State with Penny. But Lexington Thomas next year has got to be – he's here, right?
Without a question. Lex is back. Brandon Presley back at receiver, who came on late in the season.
Man.
He's a great receiver. Darren Woods back at receiver
and
as well.
And the leader pulling the strings.
Armani's back.
And don't forget Charles Williams will be back.
Will be back from injury.
Suffering the injury, yep.
So they're going to be stacked. Sacks still on offense. I think on the offensive line, I think Kyle Sacks is the only senior who's leaving. So, I mean, other than that, they're going to be stacked again on offense. So, they averaged 30-plus points this year, and it was a pretty ugly 30 points a game. If anybody, it could have been way more if they executed anywhere near their full potential. So
I agree 100%. So going to break, tell me this right now. Let's not pull any punches. I don't want any, you know, fluff here. Who has to go right now?
Who's got to go? I'll say. I think you need to make changes.
Caleb to lose his job as a color commentator. So we'll leave him out of this for a second.
I will say I think changes need to be made at both coordinator positions.
Okay, so both you think Cotton and Bear both have to go.
I think Cotton had a lot to work with, and you know some of the play calling was very questionable, especially yesterday. And the biggest play call of the season. What is it? Fourth and one.
I don't know that's a. Going for it is to me what was the decision. The play call shouldn't have mattered, but going for it was. I don't know how you put blame on an offensive coordinator that averaged 30 points a game.
No,
with the number 15 rushing offense.
I agree with you 100%.
So it's tough. I don't know how you make that change.
It's extremely tough. Yeah.
I think Cotton might be able to stay. I think Cormier should stay and probably Garrison along with Tony Sanchez. Clean house on the rest of them. The special teams coach, man, send him past Alaska if you can. I mean, by God in heaven, it was ridiculous.
There's an old saying about loyalty to a fault. I think, unfortunately, for Tony Sanchez, he has to be. He can't be loyal in some regards because it's going to cost him his job.
Another part of the college football learning curve. Loyalty is nothing.
No doubt about
college
it.
Football.
I'll tell you what, he's lucky his brother got into some trouble at Gorman or he was coming aboard too. And I think that would have been a mistake. Listen, we got to take a break. Got a lot more coming back. We're going to talk some UNLV basketball. I got a chance to talk to Jakur Justin, who is something special. And that whole basketball team, something special. We'll talk about them. The Golden Knights are absolutely on fire, and we got to talk some college football as another melee mix-up in the big picture this week. And this is Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot.
It's time for Blazin', brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza, a stone's throw from Centennial Hills Hospital. Two happy hours every single day in America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. Don't forget this Monday night. We'll be there at Monday Night Football like we are every single Monday night. Houston and Baltimore might not be the most exciting game, but it's...
You're not excited for Joe Flacco and Macho Man Tom
God
Savage?
Almighty.
Watson was still playing. It would have been exciting.
Yeah,
maybe.
They still had a chance for the playoffs. Yeah, this is probably going to be a snore, but you know what? We'll still be giving away replica jerseys, wing parties, free wings, and we'll be eating like kings down there. So come on down and check us out tomorrow night. Blazin', man, what's going on? What's hot? I told you before, Blazin' is UNLV basketball. I mean, you could say the Golden Knights are too, but this basketball team is unbelievable. But before we get into that, I just want to give a quick honorable mention to the Alabama Crimson Tide. Now, I'm not talking about the football team that took one on the chin in the Iron Bowl yesterday. I am talking about their basketball team and this freshman kid, Kyle Sexton. They got into a bench-clearing brawl with Minnesota last night. What happened from that is the consequences. Alabama lost every single player but five guys got to stay. That was it. So they had enough to field a team. A guy fouls out, and then eventually one of the players gets injured, and they are down to three players. They keep playing basketball, and they're going to compete. In the last 10 minutes and 41 seconds, Alabama outscored Minnesota 30-22. They did lose the game, but this kid Sexton had 40 points. It's an Alabama record for a freshman, and he by himself almost outscored Minnesota, one of the coolest things I've ever seen. I didn't see the game. I just watched the highlights, and it was almost mesmerizing how hard these three guys worked to stay in the game. And you think about that. It's easier to play 3-on-5 in hockey than it would be in basketball.
You know who their coach is? Alabama?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Avery Johnson.
Avery Johnson.
Talking about basketball.
The little A-train.
Avery Johnson.
They were here last year. They played two games at the MGM, and I got to check them out. But yeah, that Avery Johnson is the guy.
Hey, that's pretty. He was a great, tough-nosed little ball player.
He was a good player.
Himself.
I liked him. Yeah.
So did I. He was fun to watch.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, it obviously goes out to his players because that was a hell of a job. But blazing right now, guys, UNLV basketball, I'll tell you right now, there is just not a lot better in this town than watching this team 6-0. I knew they would be improved. I knew that Brandon McCoy was the real deal, especially when he made the 18U United States team, and they said he was the best player on that team. That let you know that it didn't matter that he went to a smaller parochial school in California. They didn't play in a real conference, and that was maybe the knock against him, and maybe even how Menzies was able to kind of slide him in the back door here at UNLV. But aside from him, Shakur Justin is the real deal. This guy is, I say, the second best player on this team. If you're talking about NBA prospects, I think Jordan Johnson might be a little more valuable because you've got to have a point guard. But Shakur Justin is the real deal, just as Brandon McCoy is. Both these guys, I believe, Brandon McCoy's a no-brainer, but I think Justin is a guy that with some more development, hey, he was JUCO Player of the Year last year. This guy could be an NBA player one day.
Yeah, he looks really, really good. And you know, what I'll say about Jordy Johnson is, I was talking to a couple guys the other night after the hockey game, and what we were talking about was UNLV basketball. And hats off to Coach Menzies because they've played, look, you can say all Prairie View, Florida A&M, but they dismantled Utah. You know, and Utah's
27 points.
Utah's
Chris.
A pretty good team. You know, even last night,
the Pac-12
there were some things that Southern Utah did that they hadn't seen so far this year, and they handled it well. I thought Southern Utah played a really good half court game, and you know, UNLV obviously with superior athletes, but you know, they were able to overcome that. But Shakur Justin, as you said, the thing is, you don't find Larry Johnsons in junior college basketball anymore. That doesn't really happen. But Shakur Justin is maybe the best impact junior transfer in the country right now because he's that good. And Jordy Johnson, you know, I said to somebody the other night, he's the best point guard UNLV has had since Kevin Kruger.
Talked about that at the press conference about Jordy Johnson with Shakur Justin and Jordan Johnson about his ability, and UNLV definitely has legitimate point guard.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to have that.
Jordan Johnson...
From a close game like this, we just, it's a learning game. It's learning about what we need to do better and what we need to focus on more in practice. Basically just focusing on us and having us do better.
Well, he's talking about doing better, and what's crazy is he talked about that being a tough game, and they won by 19 points. That's how good this team is. Now, granted, for... up until about 4 minutes to go in the game, you could say the outcome was in doubt. If you were watching the game and sitting there at the Thomas and Mack, the outcome was never in doubt. They got within a couple of points a few times, but it was almost like UNLV was toying with them, like playing with that yo-yo, knowing it's going to come back up. There was just no doubt about it. But again, Max, if you got the other cut with Justin talking about what Jordan Johnson means to this team.
He's an outstanding point guard. Like, he sees the floor good, make good passes, just he gets the team involved. And I don't know if it was or not, but I was just at the right place at the right time. He was at the right place in the right time, and it just clicked. I mean, if it was anybody else on the team, he would do so. So it's not just a me, him, it's like a him and the whole team type thing.
With that, it's just, we have good chemistry on and off the court. We're all like brothers. We argue, you see us arguing on the court, but we still get through it. We next possession mentality, as Coach Morris says. So that's how we get through games like this, one of the tough ones.
He is an incredible little ball player. And I say little because he's a small guy out there, but small in stature, not small in what he does in ability. He really is something special. And I think that having him on the court with the guys you have in front, the front court, really make him exceptional. The one thing that I worry about the most is Javon Mooring. I love his game. I think this kid has all kinds of ability. He's got moxie. He's got grit. He's got toughness. But he also has a tendency to play hero ball. and he'll go down after their UNLV will go up by maybe four. They'll get a stop. They'll be coming right down. And they've got 22 seconds to go on the shot clock, and he just comes down and fires a 25-foot bomb. He did that last year. And last year, it was live by the sword, die by the sword. A couple of times, it brought them back and actually won them a few games. But more times than not, it actually hurt them. And don't you agree?
Yeah, and you know what? I think, you know, we talked in the first segment about culture change. And I think for Jovan, it's a culture change as well, because last year he had to carry this team.
Right.
There was so many players around him that were incapable of playing at this level of college basketball. It's a matter of him getting comfortable with the guys around him, because let's be honest, he doesn't have to carry the team this year. There's so many other guys who could step up.
Oh, God.
You know, I mean, he's playing his true position. He's got a solid, really good point guard.
He's almost the fifth starter right now. Well, I mean, he really almost is.
But I think he has to start. I think he is your number two. And, you know, I think with him, like I said, it's a matter of just familiarizing self, getting comfortable, because last night was the first kind of close game they played. And for him, I think it's a matter of gaining trust in the players around him, which is something he didn't have last year.
No, it is. And the one thing, though, that he did again last night is too many times he played hero ball, Chris. And I agree, he has to be the number two. He's got the skills. He goes after loose balls as hard as I've seen anybody in the country. But, again, taking these shots, and Menzies pulled him, and he didn't play the last 8 minutes of the game. Menzies didn't throw him under a bus, which Marvin Menzies has done that before to players and to situations. He didn't, but when he was asked in the press conference, why did Javon Mourning sit out the last 8 minutes of the game?
Me. I don't know what you want me to tell you. I just decided not to play him the last few minutes. Look, Jovan, it's about winning games. And if you find a group of players that are on a roll, well, you want to sub back in LeBron just because, you know, the scores? Yeah, it was working in our favor, right? We don't have egos on this team, you know. At least I hope we don't. And I hope they all understand. He seemed to be fine. I don't know. But, we're going to coach these games and win games. Jay didn't get in. Shaq only played a couple minutes. Mbaké only played a few minutes. I don't know who else was on the bench that didn't play as much as they normally play, but my boss told me they keep score for a reason. So I'm going to make sure every time we have a chance to have come out on the winning side, we do that.
You know, I do like Marvin Menzies. I think sometimes, and Coach, if you're listening, I'm sorry, but sometimes you talk out of both sides of your mouth. And what I mean by that is, there's no way Javon Mourning was sat the last 8 minutes of the game because he didn't have the hot hand or anything. Menzies was pissed about him chucking up shots from the cheap seats with plenty of time to go on a shot clock and no reason to do that. And when Mourning, at the end of the game, and we're going to play this in a minute, they have this new tradition, which I think is kind of cool, where at the end of the game, the players all on home games, they go around and shake all the hands of they're over in the student section, all that. Now, another thing that I didn't believe Menzies on is partially this. I asked him about that in the press conference, about this new tradition, and if he had a part in it. Now, you tell me, knowing that at New Mexico State, occasionally his players would go up into the stands after games, and somehow they're doing it here. But he supposedly had nothing to do with it.
At the end of the games, the players are going and embracing the fans, going around shaking hands. I haven't seen that before. Is that something that you encouraged or something they're doing on their own?
It's something I have nothing to do with. We got great kids. I walked into the locker room and none of the kids were in there. And I said, where are they? Say, they're hugging the fans. I said, okay, I'll see them when they get in here. That was all on them. I'd love to take credit for that. We used to do that by design at New Mexico State. Periodically, we'd have, say, okay, guys, I want you to go up in the stands. But I love the fact that it came from them. And we never talked about it. We won't ever talk about it. They'll go when they, you know, want to go. And if they don't want to go for whatever reason, they won't go. I want it to be sincere. I don't want it to be scripted. So that's the kind of running rebels that this team has. So testimony to the character.
Come on, Coach. Hey,
genius.
Caleb, you're 100% right. Marketing, it's great. It gets the fans going. They get to meet the players.
The connection.
I love it. But Marvin, take credit for it because you did it. That's all that I'm saying.
You know what? I love a coach that's willing to step back and not take credit, though. So I appreciate that. But it's kind of like we see right through it, though. On this situation, it's like we know.
Caleb, it's like when he said that UNLV was his dream job and he would take it over every job in the country. I said, I love the sentiments. Yeah. I don't believe you.
It's the right thing to say, right?
Yes, but politically correct goes so far. I mean, the bottom line is when you're talking, and your tongue speaks out, fork goes in two different directions, it doesn't work. Not that it's a terrible thing in this case.
Absolutely.
But it's a lie. Okay? That's all I'm saying. It's a lie. And here's the deal.
How come you didn't counter up in the press conference and say,
you should have counted up, man.
You should have said, I'm not so sure you're calling him the truth coach.
Like you said, he almost retracted what he was about to say. But, you know, the one thing I did notice is all of the players went over, and this even tells you more about Mooring, the two lies in the press conference. Mooring walked right off the floor at the end of the game. He was not. I watched him. I was sitting right in the corner. Mooring flew right into the locker room. He didn't go over and shake hands. They won. It's a team game. You won. Caleb, let me tell you something. And I know you. I've gotten to know you over the past couple years. I don't give a crap. When you lost a game, you were right there with your team, come hell or high water. Or if you got taken out of a game, come on, man. You don't sulk and pout in college sports.
Listen, you don't. But listen, Mooring being upset about not playing, I'm not surprised. As a competitor as well,
but he played.
I'm not upset about that. About not being in when you think it matters. But to what Mimsy said earlier about why he sat him or why he wasn't sitting, he wasn't the hot hand. I don't think Mimsy has a problem with him jacking up shots if he's hitting them. I think if he's on fire and he's knocking down shots like he was last a couple times to bring the team back and actually carry the team, if he's on fire and he's hitting those shots, he doesn't sit. And I think Mimsy means that genuinely. He's going with the flow of what the game needs right now. And Mooring wasn't in the flow of the game, but so he sat at the end. So it makes sense the way he answered it. Mooring being upset about it, that's fine. You know, but like you said, check your ego at the door. You know, don't let that carry over into team. Don't start woe is me and complain about not getting minutes. If you're not playing well, you're going to sit. That's pretty much the culture that you want on a basketball team. If you're not the hot hand right now, but you think you are all the time, then you got to take a seat for a while. And I think Mooring has his value to the team. Whenever he is hot, I think Mimsy will definitely ride the hot hand. I think he's willing to do that. But like you said, it's about winning. And if at the time you're not the hot hand, Mimsy doesn't have a problem sitting you. He's not going to stroke your ego just because you think you should come in, even if you're ice cold from the floor. So there's some genuine, you know, method behind what Mimsy is saying. While he is blowing a little smoke with some of it, I think there is a genuine message behind what it is. And I think Mooring has to understand that. When he's hot, he got to feel that he's hot and go ahead and let it go. But when he's not, you got to be willing to play team ball and pass that thing around, find who is hot before you just start chunking up everything.
I'm not fully disagreeing with you, but the bottom line is I don't believe anybody coaches hero ball.
No.
And
no.
What Mooring plays is hero ball. He did it last year, and even if he was hot, he hit his first three-pointers. Granted, he got cold, but I don't think it matters. I think at some point, after you've done it three or four times, it's like, we don't need you to go right down and chuck it up.
No.
Use some of the shot clock. Listen, we got to take a break, but before we do, I want to play a little bit of this interview with Shakur Justin. I got a chance to talk to him after the game. This guy is the real deal. He's averaging over a double-double in his first six games, and he's never played D1 ball. This is a guy that was the JUCO Player of the Year last year, and I asked him about that and a few other things.
Welcome to Shakur Justin, 6-0 to start the season. How you feeling, man?
I'm just feeling great, but I'm a very humble person, so right now I'm just taking in all the excitement and just staying focused on the next game. But it's great to be 6-0. I mean, like Coach said, it can't be no better. It's the sixth league. It just can't. It's either up or down from here.
I was going to say, how do you explain the chemistry of this team coming together so quick? I mean, not that you've played dynamo teams, but you just played a Pac-12 team and beat them soundly the other night. You come back from this game. A lot of people said, hey, this could be a letdown game. Maybe started that way a bit, but 19-point win is not a letdown game.
No, it was it wasn't us. They came out here. They played good. They ran their sets. They made tough shots. It's just we're going to get those teams down the road. Every game is going to be like a nail-biter game if we make it that. everyone's going to give us their best shot. Everyone's going to come right at our chest. It's just how we take it, how we adapt, and how we execute on the long run.
Philosophy of Marvin Menzies and this team seems to be to put the running back in the running Rebels. You guys move the ball up and down the court, another 100-point performance. Is that kind of the message you're getting?
The message is we're going to be running Rebels. The outcome is determined by the score. Marvin, he put the pinpoint on being a running Rebels. He wants us to run and practice. We run. He just wants us to get up, get tempo. I mean, if we could score the ball fast, he wants us to. Now, if we got to slow down and get to the sets, we still got to run in through the sets and run fast. It's really the running Rebels. They did it in what, 91, 90? So he just want to bring back everything that they did.
I know you say you're a humble guy, but we're all sitting there talking during the thing. How does everyone miss on this Shakur Justin guy, this guy, a JUCO Player of the Year? But when did you get so good? I mean, obviously last year, JUCO Player of the Year, but how come you weren't D1 right off the get-go?
I made a lot of mistakes my high school career, so it was just something I had to deal with. I mean, I'm not mad that I made that mistake. Well, not the actual mistakes, the mistakes I made. Like, I don't regret doing anything I did because it put me in this position here right now. I would have been happy if I went Division I straight out of high school, but, I mean, life throws you curveballs. It's either you're going to strike out or you're just going pretty much, like, see where I was coming. And then take your best swing at it. Yeah.
I'd say this year so far, you're hitting the curveball pretty deep. How much did that JUCO experience help you right now with the running Rebels and playing D1 ball?
Honestly, I probably needed that. That's probably God's plan, you know, to send me JUCO, learn the college level, you know. Because my freshman year, yeah, I did good, but I could have did better because it was a different tempo of what I played in high school. I went to a public school, so it was competition, but, like, we always played. In my conference, we either play someone that was lower than us or a little bit smaller than me. So, like, I got my stuff off a little easier. Now it's like I got to learn more things, more techniques, more moves to be more efficient. So I'm honestly happy I went junior college, and I had a great coach, Steve Vec. He taught me the ways, he taught me the ropes, and I was just successful.
How have you ever played with talent like this? Guys around you like a Brandon McCoy, a Jordan Johnson. I mean, it's got to be a lot of fun, right?
Yeah, every time I've been on, it's just been talented. Like I don't see talent as, like, skill set. I'm more of a heart type dude. If you got heart, then you're talented to me. Like, I respect heart. Now, if you're skilled and you have heart, then it's a whole different story. That's what we are right now.
The heart and skill. Define this team right now. Someone said, Shakur, define UNLV. What is this running Rebel basketball team?
First off, we're running Rebels. Second off, we're just a family. That's the only two. Keep it simple. Every time we break, it's family on three. I mean, yeah, a lot of other people are family, but, like, we grope each other on and off the court. We talk, we communicate, we laugh, we joke. Just like any other family, we argue. But we learn how to get through it, and that's just the heart, being family and holding each other accountable.
One other thing, and I'll let you go in a second. I just want to know, you know, one of the things that define good teams are the way they come out in half, at the end of after the first half. You usually are expecting to see a better team in the second half. In the past, UNLV teams haven't had that as of late, but we're definitely seeing a better team come out of the locker room at halftime than at the beginning, and it's still a pretty good team at the beginning. What's going on at halftime that's making you guys adjust and be a better team in the second half?
In the locker room, before coach come in, you know, as a team, we sit there, talk about the things that we did bad and things we did good, so we can just either execute them even more or fix the bugs that need to be tweaked a little bit. And we come out like today, we came out, we did our part. They just went a little harder. I mean, you can't fault them for going harder. We locked down, we played defense, they made some tough shots, but In the locker room, we just communicate. Communication is everything on our team.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
How hot are the Las Vegas Golden Knights. They could have been blazing five in a row, six of the last seven. This team is absolutely on fire. They are in first place in the Western Conference's Pacific Division. They just refuse to lose. They're fun to watch. And Shea Theodore is on the menu for this week's Nightcap.
Golden Knights report, Shea Theodore. You score the opener tonight, and then you assist on the game winner. What are you feeling right now?
I feel good. I feel like my confidence is kind of growing game by game. The past couple games, I had a good time in Anaheim getting that win the other night, and then to be able to contribute to tonight, it feels good.
It seems like we came back up. You get to go to Vancouver, so you're back home. You get to see a lot of family. It seemed to really get your confidence going. Then you go into Anaheim, a place you're used to playing, like you said, as well. How much do you think that helped?
I think it helped a lot. I feel like to be able to, anytime you go home, you can kind of hit the reset a little button. I got to see some friends and some family, and definitely that reset button that was good for me and my confidence. And I feel like ever since I've been playing real well.
Gotta be honest with you. At the beginning of the year, I thought you were on this roster. Really surprised me. Went to Chicago, but how much motivation was that to you? And everyone was kind of saying Shea Theodore has made this team, and then you go down for a minute, but you're used to that. Back and forth last year, you lived out of a hotel room.
Yeah, I dealt with it all of last year. It's nothing I was new, nothing I wasn't familiar with, I should say. But I just feel like the confidence I was shown from the coaching staff and the management as soon as I got back and they were able to make some moves, it was pretty big for myself, and to be able to get that comfortability of getting a place here and kind of getting set up a little bit.
What do you think now? Now staying, you're here to stay, right? I mean, you're not going to let them send you back down anymore.
No, my job here is to play well, and I want to be in the lineup every night. I want to, show the coaching staff and the management that I belong here, and that that no matter if I'm on my entry level or not, that I should be in the lineup. And I feel like I'm playing real well right now, so I'll keep it up.
Tell me about this Golden Knights team right now. This has got to be special. I mean, you guys are an expansion team. Do you ever start playing like one?
Yeah, I feel like we're really coming together as a group. We don't have any big egos or anything to worry about, and I feel like that's where we really come together as a team, and it really shows out on the ice against a lot of these teams who've been playing together for a long time. So
you're playing defense, goaltending is a huge thing. This team has used five goaltenders this season. It's got to be nice as a defenseman to be comfortable that no matter who seems to be between the pipes, they're playing well and you guys can play in front of them good.
Yeah, any goalie that we've had in there has played great. It does start with our team game and how we are defensively, and we're not turning the puck over and we're not leaving those wide open two-on-ones or breakaways. But then again, our goalies have made, huge stops. Max has been great. Subi's been great. Kind of anyone that we've been in there has been a real solid goaltender.
Final thing I'm just going to say to you. I'm going to say one word to you. Gerard Gallant.
He's a great coach. He knows exactly what he's doing. Play a structured game, and we're just gonna keep playing underneath him.
Shea Theodore, special players, special team. It's a lot of fun to cover these guys and dig them. Real quickly, we got Emily Van Buskirk on the phone along with, I believe, Kaylee Krish is on with us also today. So we're going to put her on in 1 second. Real quick, guys, because we're not going to have the time. Your pick of the week. Mags, who do you got? Because everybody's on fire here.
Well, I'm going with the Raiders. I liked them the other day laying 5, and the line is now down to 3.5. So I like the Raiders laying 3.5. Look, it's do or die for Oakland. They fired Ken Norton Jr., knocked him out like his dad got knocked out back in the 80s. He's out of there. They made the change they needed to be made. They were embarrassed last week by Tom Brady down in Mexico City. Picked apart like my deep-fried Thanksgiving turkey. They're going to bounce back this week. They need this game where their season is over. Denver's garbage. They're playing the game at the Oakland Alameda Coliseum. Do they still call it that? But I think Oakland, this is do-or-die time for them. I think David Carr is going to have a big game, and despite the fact that the Broncos' secondary is pretty good, I still think they're going to get the job done.
Mags at 7-4. Caleb Herring is our guest, 3-0. Who do you got?
I'm taking a risk. I'm going to pick two teams. I'm going to go both teams on bounce backs, so I'm going to go Seahawks and Titans bounce back. They're both going to get it done. I mean, they got some pretty – the Seahawks got the Niners, so I think they're going to take out some aggression on them. And with that defense being weakened, I think Russell Wilson's going to really take over. But the Titans, I think, really need to bounce back. Marcus Mariota is one of my favorite all-time collegiate quarterbacks. He's been struggling as of late. The Steelers really took it to him last week. So I think Tennessee and a bounce back over the Colts.
Well, I'll have Dewey's picks for you. He is on fire, 5-0, so I'll try to get those up on Twitter. I'm going with, real simply, I'm taking the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm going to give all the points in the world to the Packers. You said it last week. Huntley's terrible. He's hurt. And the Steelers, by default, are one of the better teams in the AFC this year, which is kind of surprising. It really is bad. So there you go. There you have it. Let's get right to this, Mags. Fact this.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Well, fact this. It is a fact. There will be a four-team playoff starting on New Year's Day in Division I college football. And after yesterday, one of the top four teams in the country does have a chance of being left out. To me, this is a clear indication that it is already time to start seriously considering expanding the national championship playoff to 8 teams. That will almost ensure that all 5 power conferences will be represented, and it opens the door for sleepers like a 2-loss TCU team if they were to shock the world and beat Oklahoma. Plain and simple, Auburn might be the best team in the country right now, but I think Alabama beats anyone else in the country and have a better than average chance of beating them. If they were in the Iron Bowl Part 2, they'd beat Auburn. I think that. But bottom line, if Wisconsin wins the Big Ten Championship and Clemson wins the ACC title, Oklahoma the Big 12 Championship, I'm starting to think Alabama won't get in. Hey, M. Kaylee, we don't have a lot of time. Give me your guys' thoughts.
Whoa, oh my gosh. Put us on the spot like that. I just want to go ahead and say that it's not called the Oakland Alameda Coliseum. We just call it the Oakland Coliseum. So just wanted to give you a little heads up there. But we got to see a great game at Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
And Georgia really impressed us with the way that they just shut it down. So I like Georgia. Kaylee likes Georgia.
I really like Georgia. But, you know, we weren't used to even seeing Bryce Love there at Stanford. We are not used to seeing so much of a run game. So that was different for us. But we really enjoyed being at this game. And, you know, I think Oklahoma is going to stay up there in the top four. You know, they're going to take on TCU, but they got Baker Mayfield. So
Baker Mayfield for president.
Wow.
I know she loves – ladies, one more thing, and again, Sideline Sass, you have to check out this podcast. It is awesome. They run it twice a month. They are really, really good, very entertaining. To see why it is getting some national attention. But ladies, again, I got two guys here that tell me Alabama is going to be in the national title game. They have no doubt. I'm sitting here scratching my head.
The playoff
to get to the national title. I think if they get in the playoff, they'll be in the national title game. I don't care who they play, but I'm not so sure they're going to get there. What do you think?
I think that there is a chance we could see a top, you know, a Final Four with no Alabama, and you know that is a world that I want to live in this year.
That game that they just played, the way that they played it, Nick Saban didn't even have words when he was coaching. He was at a loss for words at how to motivate that team. I'm sorry, if you play like that at this time of the year, forget about it. Get out of here.
Now that Auburn, has, you know, beat two number one seed teams, they actually have a better looking, you know, resume than Alabama does. So I could definitely see a Final Four with no Alabama in it.
Jarrett Stidham for vice president.
Well, you know why I say Alabama might not get in is exactly what Kaylee just said. It's the body of work. Their two best wins now, LSU, who's a 3-loss team, and Ole Miss, who's a 4-loss team. If I'm on the committee, I'm looking at that, and I'm saying, I'm sorry, Oklahoma gets in if they win, because these guys think if Oklahoma wins, they won't get in, especially if Wisconsin beats Ohio State, that would end it. Girls, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining real quickly, and your prediction. Will Alabama get in or won't they?
No. We're going to go no. We're no.
Wow, they're no. I like it. I'm on the fence. Listen, we really appreciate you, girls. We'll have you on again soon. This is Out of Line. We're out of time. I want to thank everyone for being on the show. Caleb, Magnum, Kaylee, Emily, and I definitely want to thank Shakur Justin for coming on, and Shea Theodore, Marvin Menzies. We appreciate you all. We're here every Sunday, 8 to 9 a.m., Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the Vegas Golden Knights.